Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Marcia James, Bruce Alpert, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us the next part of the VOA Learning English series, America's Presidents. But first, scientists have traveled to the mountains of Oman to find a way to remove carbon dioxide gas from the atmosphere. The geologists hope to find an effective and low-cost way to capture the gas, which is blamed for worldwide climate change. The Middle Eastern country of Oman is one of the few places in the world where the Earth's mantle is easy to reach. This part of the Arabian Peninsula is where an unusual rock formation pulls carbon out of the air. Geologists are taking rock samples from the Al Hajar Mountains. They want to discover how a natural process changed carbon dioxide into minerals such as limestone and marble millions of years ago. Peter Kellerman is a geochemist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. He has been exploring Oman's hills for almost 30 years. You can walk down these beautiful canyons and basically descend 20 kilometers into the Earth's interior, he said. This area in Oman has the largest exposed parts of the Earth's mantle, a part of the Earth that is usually far below the surface. It was brought to the surface by the forces of plate tectonics millions of years ago. The mantle contains rocks called peridotite. The rocks react with carbon in the air and water to form marble and limestone. Kellerman explained that magnesium atoms combined with carbon dioxide to form limestone, quartz, and magnesium carbonate. He said one of the mountains nearby holds about a billion tons of CO2, or carbon dioxide. In Oman's mountain caves, rain and groundwater form pools. The rain and water pull carbon from the exposed mantle to make mineral formations called stalactites and stalagmites. The surface of these natural pools of water develops a layer of white carbonate, a kind of mineral that contains carbon. Kellerman said, if you take off this thin white film, it will grow back in a day. He says that is very fast for a geological process. Kellerman and a team of 40 scientists have formed the Oman Drilling Project to study how the process works. They want to find out how the rocks managed to capture so much carbon over time. They want to know if the process could be used to clean carbon from the Earth's atmosphere. Kellerman's team recently spent 4 months in Oman collecting many rock samples. They hope to use these samples to develop a geological history of the process that turns carbon dioxide into carbonate. The team plans to send 13 tons of samples from 4 different areas to a research ship off the coast of Japan. Kellerman and other geologists will study the rocks there. They want to find out how the rocks captured so much carbon over 90 million years. and they want to know if there is a way to make that process happen faster. Kellerman thinks a drilling operation could be used to move carbon-rich water into the new seabed on underwater mountains. The submerged rock would chemically take in carbon from the water. The water could then move back to the surface to absorb more carbon from the atmosphere. Then the process would repeat itself. The scientists hope their research will provide a way of dealing with carbon dioxide and other carbon-based greenhouse gases linked to climate change. Climate change is a global change in weather patterns. Scientists say it is caused by an increase in levels of carbon dioxide and other gases that trap heat in the atmosphere. The use of fossil fuels is considered a major source of carbon dioxide. Until now, most efforts to combat climate change have centered on reducing emissions from cars and power plants. But researchers are testing ways to remove or recycle carbon already in the seas and sky. In Iceland, they inject carbon into volcanic rock at the Hellasheti geothermal plant. In China, carbon is filtered and reused at the Sinopec fertilizer plant. Any one technique is not guaranteed to succeed, said Stuart Hazeldine. He is a geology professor at the University of Edinburgh. He also serves on a UN climate group studying how to reduce atmospheric carbon. Kellerman said the Oman drilling project would need more years of testing. He hopes the energy industry will take an interest and help the project. So far, it has only received support from science organizations, including the U.S. Space Agency, NASA.
A number of Rohingya refugee children have disappeared in Bangladesh and are feared to be victims of human trafficking groups. In the past 7 months, more than 70,000 Rohingya have fled violent persecution in their homeland of Myanmar. There have been widespread reports of rapes and murders as part of a military campaign against Rohingya civilians. The Myanmar government denies the charges. Rashida is among the Rohingya who fled. She and her children arrived at a camp in the Cox Bazar area of Bangladesh late last year. Her husband had been killed in a military offensive in Myanmar's Rakhine State, where most of the minority Rohingya live. A month ago, Rashida's 10-year-old son, Mohammed, disappeared from a school he was attending. Rashida says all efforts to learn what happened to him have failed. As many as 300,000 to 500,000 Rohingya are thought to be living in Bangladesh. Several non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, in the region are working to help the refugees. But political sensitivities restrain the groups from reporting fully about the issues Rohingya face. However, the recent child disappearances among the newly arrived refugees has led one NGO to speak out. Action Against Hunger says it knows of 16 suspected kidnappings since January. The group's director says newly arrived refugee families are at special risk of kidnapping and exploitation. He says they lack the safety of community structures they had back home. Human trafficking groups are well established in the region, but little is known about the disappearances which have taken place both inside and outside the camps. Many Rohingya fear asking local authorities for help. This leaves little hope for parents like Rashida. She says all she can do is protect her daughter, continue to search, and find comfort in her religion. I'm Marcia James.
College students are facing more debt than ever before. Students who graduated from college in 2015 left school with an average of $34,000 in debt, the Federal Reserve Bank reported this month. Just 10 years ago, the average student debt was $20,000. The Federal Reserve Bank said students and their parents are taking out bigger loans than in the past. That is because state and local governments are paying a smaller percentage of the cost of higher education. William Dudley is president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. He said that graduates from some colleges are having trouble finding good-paying jobs. That is making it difficult for them to pay off their loans, he said.
Several measures have been proposed to deal with the rising costs of college. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo recently signed into law a bill that will let New Yorkers send their children to public colleges without having to pay tuition. Students from families whose yearly incomes are $125,000 or less will be eligible for free tuition. The New York plan is similar to what Senator Bernie Sanders proposed nationally during his unsuccessful presidential campaign last year. Sanders lost the Democratic nomination to Hillary Clinton. Cuomo said 95% of jobs created since 2008 require at least some college education.
So you need a college education. At the same time, college is harder and harder to get. It's more and more expensive. You can't go to the family and say, pay the tuition. They can't. You go and you get loans, you graduate with a mountain of debt, you pay for half your life.
Other states are trying different ways to make college more affordable. In Tennessee, all high school graduates can attend two-year community colleges without paying tuition. Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam wants to expand that program. He wants to also permit all adults without a college degree to attend community college without paying tuition. Sarah McCormick is a doctor in Palatine, Illinois. She wrote about her efforts to repay $400,000 in loans she took out for medical school on the website studentdebtcrisis.org. Many people think doctors are rich, she wrote. I have many friends who are pinching pennies to even make it as physicians right now. Their loans are even higher than mine, and some are paying up to $4,000 a month.
International students often pay full tuition to attend American colleges. They are not eligible for American tuition assistance programs, such as Pell Grants. It is difficult for international students to get loans. They need someone to promise to pay it off if the student fails to do so. Kwojo Polku Agyeman is a 27-year-old graduate student from Ghana. He is getting his master's degree in business and finance at Louisiana State University. His first year of study cost him $30,000. He saved up money before coming to LSU by working at Ghana's tax office, money he has used to pay tuition. He also got some financial help from his parents. His father is an engineer, and his mom works for Ghana's government. Coming to America is hard, and you have to figure out a way to make it work, Polku Agyeman said. Still, he is glad he decided to go to LSU. He says he has learned a lot, and he says he will only have to pay for 10% of his second year of master's studies. LSU will cover the remaining tuition costs for him.
Mako Lile is a PhD student in critical dance studies at the University of California at Riverside. She describes herself as half French and half Japanese. She said she did not have to pay for her first year in the PhD program. But after the first year, she had to pay $15,000 a year as a non-resident of California. I was told everything would be free and not to worry, Lile said. It has been a struggle to find the $15,000 because her student visa limits her to working about 20 hours a week during the school year, she said. A fellowship helped, and so did a job with her college's International Student Association. But she said she has no guarantees that the fellowship will continue.
During his successful campaign for president, Donald Trump proposed that student loan borrowers limit their monthly loan payments based on their ability to pay. His education secretary is Betsy DeVos of Michigan. In response to questions from the U.S. Senate, DeVos said changes to the loan programs should be made carefully. She promised to work with Congress to develop proposals.
Park Muth is a college admissions advisor in Charlottesville, Virginia. He said most colleges look for international students who can pay full tuition because they cannot find enough American students who can afford to do so. In many countries, only the top 1% of wage earners would be able to pay full price to send their children to American colleges. Muth then mentioned an international student from Myanmar. Not long ago, she was living in a refugee camp without enough food. Now, he said, she has won a scholarship to attend the University of Texas next fall. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about a vice president. John Tyler was William Henry Harrison's partner on the ticket in the 1840 election. He was the Tyler of the campaign slogan Tippecanoe and Tyler too. But only 1 month into his term as president, Harrison unexpectedly died. He was the first U.S. president to die in office. Today, Americans accept that when that happens, the vice president becomes the president. But in 1841, no one really knew what to do. So people turned to the Constitution. It said, if the president is removed from office, or if he dies, resigns, or is not able to perform his duties, his power and responsibility is given to the vice president. But the meaning of those words was unclear. Did the vice president really become the president? Or did the vice president just act like the president? The Constitution may not have been clear, but John Tyler was. He claimed that after Harrison's death, he really was the president. Tyler made sure he was quickly sworn in. He answered only to the title president. He even refused to open letters that were sent to acting President Tyler. Eventually, Americans accepted John Tyler was the nation's 10th president. But some Americans were not happy about that fact. During his presidency, all but one of Tyler's cabinet advisors resigned, and members of his own party tried to impeach him. Tyler was from the southern state of Virginia, home to five earlier U.S. presidents. Like many of the leaders before him, he was a lawyer from an upper-class family who owned slaves. He strongly supported the power of the states against the federal government, expansion of slavery, and rule by a small, elite group. But the United States was starting to change. For example, President John Quincy Adams had proposed creating a national system of roads. The Missouri Compromise of 1820 limited slavery in new states in the Northwest. And in the 1830s, many white men who did not own property earned the right to vote. In other words, the U.S. was becoming more national, abolitionist, and equal. Tyler resisted these changes. He fought against them as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, a governor of Virginia, and a senator. His fight reached a crisis during the presidency of Andrew Jackson. The two men belonged to the same party, the Democratic Party. However, Tyler hated Jackson's populist policies and use of presidential powers against the states. In the middle of the 1830s, Tyler joined with several other political leaders to create a new anti-Jackson party. They were called the Whigs. The The new Whig Party badly wanted to win the 1840 presidential election against Jackson's right-hand man, Martin Van Buren. They proposed John Tyler as the party's vice presidential candidate because they hoped he would appeal to Southern voters. The Whigs succeeded. Tyler and Harrison won the election. The new party expected that they would be able to achieve many of their policy goals. But then Harrison died, and Tyler unexpectedly became president. Tyler kept Harrison's cabinet of top advisors, but he did not accept their advice. Whig lawmakers presented bill after bill to Tyler, but he failed to support the measures. He believed they gave too much power to the federal government over the states. In anger, all but one of Tyler's cabinet members resigned. Then Whig leaders officially declared that Tyler was no longer part of their group. The following year, they even moved to impeach him. He became known as a president without a party. Tyler was able to achieve one major political act, however. 3 days before he left office, he signed the law that made Texas a state. Perhaps wisely, Tyler withdrew from the next presidential election. He eventually withdrew even his support for the federal government. He became a leader in the movement for Southern secession. In other words, he believed the Southern states had the right to separate from the North and leave the Union. In time, the separation between the South and North would lead to the Civil War. Tyler was an unusual president. He took office in an unusual way, and he took the unusual step of vetoing legislative action proposed by his own party. His family life has other unusual details. Tyler was the first president to get married while in office. He was the president with the most children, and two of his grandchildren remained alive until well into the 21st century. In 1844, Tyler married Julia Gardner. She was his second wife. His first wife, Letitia, had died 2 years earlier. John and Letitia Tyler had 8 children together. Since Julia Gardner Tyler was 24 years old, 30 years younger than her new husband, the two had plenty of time to have another 7 children. And because one of their sons had children in the 1920s, 2 of Tyler's grandchildren are still alive as of early 2017. Tyler is not remembered as a good president, but he is remembered for establishing a precedent, a way of doing something that other people have followed. The Tyler precedent permitted the peaceful transfer of power from president to vice president in 1841, and it eased the transition after other presidents have died since then. In 1967, the Constitution was even changed to clarify what Tyler had claimed all along. When the president dies, the vice president becomes the new chief executive. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.